Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken care of. It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Here's the pitch, swung on. Fly ball out into left center. It's deep. It's up and gone. Left center on the catwalk. Right up above their bullpen. Doc got it up. Glanville got it up big time.
Doug Glanville, not known as a home run hitter, but he is a guy who gets the bat on the ball consistently and hits it sharply in a ballpark like this that can pay off.
Doug Glanville on a pinch hit. Runner goes. And a base hit on a hit run into left center. Conine, a diving attempt. It'll get by. Walton racing around. He will score. On his way to third, Glanville, and he's in there with a run-scoring triple.
Line drive right field coming hard. Bautista can't get it. Glanville's going to get at least three. He might circle him. He might circle him. But Boots waving him on. Boots waving him on. It's an inside the park home run. Doug Glanville.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sunday mornings on The Score.
Nice to have some highlights from an MLB career. Outstanding. Doug Glanville joining us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Doug, was that Harry Callis? I wasn't sure if that's who that was on the call, or do I have my eras confused?
You got it, Matt. I mean, wow. I mean, I just get chills listening to Harry Callis. I was fortunate to play for two Harrys, with Carey and Callis, legends, and just to hear the call was just as much excitement as hitting it. I'll tell you, that voice is just timeless.
Right? I mean, that is, some people just sound like baseball and always and forever will, whether it's Jack Buck or, but you had Harry and Harry calling your seasons. Not so bad. I assume that the Paul Mall was burning in the ashtray while he made that call. I think that's what he smoked.
Yeah, he had, and he'd come in his white suits, and he would sit in the back of the plane, which was unheard of for media, but he had been kind of grandfathered in since the 70s, 80s. So he had a lot of, passes because he was kind of one of the players, and it was a great honor to listen to him, and he would call like fantasy drafts just on his spare time. they were great. I still have a letter that Harry Carey gave me at the end of my rookie year, just to compliment me on a good first season and stuff. So they paint the pictures of the game, and it's so important.
Yeah, your reverence for the game is obvious in everything that you write and whenever you talk about it. And it's infectious, Doug. And so what a pleasure it was for you to get to play and now to get to talk about. And I heard that that reverence coming through when you and Jason talked to Bob Costas the other day. It was a terrific episode of Starkville with Bob Costas on there. And talk about some people who just kind of sound like the game. Well, I guess Bob sounds like whatever sport he's doing. But what did you take away from that conversation? Because I had a couple things I wanted to run by you, but what did you take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, Bob Costas was, you know, the voice certainly of my childhood coming up. I mean, he worked 40 years in covering sports, and that's kind of around when my fandom, you know, really kicked into gear to present day. But I took a lot away. I know that he's always had a lot of different thoughts on the game, especially when it comes to these type of moments where not only we're dealing with unprecedented times, but we're looking at sort of the union versus, you know, players association versus the ownership, figuring out how to move forward. And so, you know, what kind of playoff systems do you have? Like, how do you handle safety and health and welfare and all these things? So we made him a commissioner for the day and just said, go. And it was a lot of fun, a lot of different ideas. And I'm sure baseball, as we know, they're certainly taking their time weighing all these things currently.
Yeah, after you and I are done, I'll play for the listeners. I took a snippet of it, of Bob's postseason proposal that he said he had gotten from Jerry Reinsdorf. I'd never heard it anywhere, and it's a really good one. It's really interesting. But let's stick to the modern moment for a second. Doug, have you had a chance to look at the 67-page document, or at least the reports on said document on the safety protocols? It's daunting, isn't it? It's daunting. It is. It's exhaustive. It is incredibly thorough. I hope it's possible. What were some of your takeaways from it?
I mean, you hit it. Every adjective you just mentioned, right? It is. It's comprehensive, to say the least. And I mean, makes sense. That's what you need to do in addressing something that is still has so much uncertainty. So they're doing everything they can to protect and create comfort and to set new standards. The daunting aspect of it is, you know, look, you know, I'm a parent of four, and just homeschooling or going anywhere, you know, which is minimal, just trying to figure out how to keep a four-year-old from touching this. And I mean, I'm trying to imagine that at a larger scale with teams and families, and, you know, literally they have down the, if you use the bullpen phone, you have to wipe it down right after. I mean, that's the detail. And who's going to, like, how are you going to get everybody to remember all these things, let alone, like, hit a curveball, right? And I mean, it's amazing. And obviously, so many people in our society now are doing this who are essential, from the medical profession to delivering groceries. So it's not that, you know, the world is enduring this right now. But when you're sort of non-essential on the entertainment side, it takes a different kind of color.
Yeah, that's true. So we are non-essential. The game is non-essential. But at some point, non-essential life is going to have to resume, or as much of it as we can resume needs to resume. I'm not convinced that 2021 is going to look vastly different. I guess it's possible. But some of this might just be the way that life is lived in a post-virus world. And that, while that is inherently pessimistic, I suppose, it does lead me to want to try.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that. Just let alone, even if you're, okay, this is clear, or, you know, some magic moment where it's gone. It's just the adjustments you have to make, not only from responding to how life has shifted and the fallout of it, which will have a ripple and domino effect, but it's also preparing going forward about changes in your life you're trying to make, or society as a whole, about doing things differently, right? And you know, the economics of the game, and when we're talking about baseball, the certain protocols and all these ways that we're going to see things live them differently. So that is absolutely true. And if you're not making these adjustments off of something this serious, then what are you doing? You have to change something, or you're susceptible to it all happening again and being grossly underprepared.
So if you're a player, Doug Glanville, if you're a player and you see this as presented to the union on Friday night, do you then look at it as, all right, the owners are concerned about me and they are concerned about trying to do this the right way, so let's move forward and negotiate in good faith? Or do some of them look at it and say, this is horrifying and I can't imagine doing this, screw it. What is the reaction of a player when this hits your desk on Friday night?
Yeah, well, I think you have both. You know, you Blake Snell, you know, came out and focused a lot on the economics, and that's, you know, his priority, as he expressed, and safety. But, you know, some have different circumstances. For example, if you are, we talked to Sean Doolittle on our show, and he mentioned, like, a family scenario. He said, one of my teammates just had a newborn and, you know, living with their grandparents and all. You know, these will change, you know, completely how you'll see the safety and risk. And that is very personal. So even though as a players association, you're trying to have a unified front and bring everybody together and common ground, you're also looking at each player separately and say, well, his circumstance may dictate. He's a rookie. He's 20. He's not married or whatever. He may see it differently. So that's the challenge of unifying such disparate and diverse different viewpoints into one space. I think many players will respect that, yes, the protocols were taken very seriously, but it's also going to be, how are you really going to follow it? You have 50 players around. Everybody's different. Some people don't care. You might have language translation issues, all kind of questions. Who knows? I can't imagine it possible that every single player is going to follow this to the T. It's just not going to happen. And then what are your fail-safes and responses when things do go awry? Because there's going to be setbacks. I mean, come on, there's going to be setbacks in every facet of our lives, and we're going to have to figure out how to adjust there. And baseball is going to be no different.
Doug, do you think that this is a moment where the sides, economically and in a business sense, should look at rejiggering the entire model? I know it's a lot to think about, but here we are, and a lot of industries are going to have to think about this stuff. The inequities between the haves and the have-nots have long made the game so problematic when it comes to bargaining. And the free market system, as replicating capitalism, can be so. Like, is this a moment to think about more openness, revenue sharing, and a cap and a floor? Is it a moment to rethink the way that baseball does its business?
Yes. Well, I'm going to steal a quote from the Hartford Public Schools superintendent and Leslie Torres Rodriguez, and she says, "Change happens at the speed of trust." And so one of the problems you have is, although innovation is a great opportunity right now, you have to believe in confidence with each other and work in good faith. And there's just still a lot of mistrust that exists between ownership and the Players Association. And you know, on a public domain, that will not be taken well if you end up not being able to move forward when you can, because, you know, you're fighting over, you know, or negotiating over things in a very, without the good faith that you need, whether it's economics or whatever. So they have to get, you know, past that hurdle. And there's no doubt that that's where everything moves forward from that vantage point. So although the opportunities are there, you know, seven-inning games and, you know, whatever you have, you know, doubleheaders, bringing back the days of doubleheaders and bullpen carts or whatever you have, you have to, you know, come together on these innovations. And when you don't have the trust, you're going to see every move is some economic opportunity to create advantage. That's where the trust will break things down. So you're going to go, oh, well, wait a minute, are you doing this because you're trying to not pay us? Or, you know, you say you have $4 billion in losses, but what's really in that number? Can we audit your books? You know, and so on. So that's where you have these sticking points of innovation, because you're not going to see it in this collective way. So they really have to get past those hurdles, because I think there's a great opportunity here and a very exciting one about looking at the game, not only economically, but rules, and just say, hey, here's a chance we could kind of rewrite some things and improve the game for the future.
Yeah, it is an opportunity, but boy, that's the speed of trust. It's that's a pretty slow speed historically between these two sides. Yep. Unfortunately, like so much of the country, I've been watching and obsessed with The Last Dance on ESPN. It's been great fun, and that Jordan-esque chip on the shoulder that we basically name for him, that it, you know, inventing the slights or using actual slights, using the motivation to get more out of himself. You shared a story on that episode of Starkville. Would you mind sharing with the listeners that one day of deeply personal motivation with which you went to the ballpark and went to the plate, if you could share that?
Yes. Oh, well, in terms of, oh, yeah, for me personally, yes,
there's
no doubt. Well, you know, Jordan talked a lot about, and you saw it in his world of how he could will himself, right, seemingly, in these scenarios. And basketball is so different than baseball. You know, baseball, we have, you know, these 162 games. It's, you know, you're trying to pace yourself. You're trying to – so it's hard to be that Jordan mindset every day. And when I played against Jordan that year, I remember him telling our third baseman that he's like, man, I've never been this tired in my entire life after he played like 100 straight games in a row. So that was a great nod to baseball, that the mental wear down is so severe. It's not the physical demands quite the same. So for me personally, I tried to parallel some moment where I felt Jordan-esque. And The moment I could only come up with was the last game of the 2002 season. I had 998 hits. And it was, you know, the end of the year, and we're definitely out of it. We're in Florida against the Marlins. And my dad had been sick for 3 years, and this is year three. So I knew from my last visit that this was kind of the beginning of the end. He had strokes, he had cancer, and I'd, you know, been driving up to ERs from up into Jersey from Philly, like for years at that point. So he's gravely ill, and he's in a hospital in Jersey, and I have 998 hits, and there's one game left in the season, and Carl Pavano's on the mound. And there was a lot of battle, the three-game series, because I had 996, I think, going into that three-game series. And Larry Bowa was my manager, and he wasn't playing me. And finally, the PR rep, Lee Tobin, said, look, you need to play him. We're not going anywhere. He can get 1,000 hits this weekend. So he sat me the first day, and if there's divine intervention, Pat Burrell, in the second game, gets hurt sliding into home plate, and I have to go in for him, and I get 2 hits. So I have 998 now. Last game, Pavano's on the mound, and I woke up and I said, there's no way Carl Pavano is getting me out today. It's like, and I'd never, you know, said that in such a deep belief and faith than ever in my career. I felt confident. I played well. I had good years. But I was like, there's no way this guy is getting me out. And so I got a hit in the first 3 at-bats. I was 3 for 3, got my 1,000th hit, and my dad passed away at 7:15 p.m. that night when the game ended, literally as I walked off the field. And so I buried him with that baseball, 1,000th hit, and I put it in his casket. So that's Jordan on a day-to-day basis. So it's unfathomable, the drain and the energy it took. So his mind needs to be like in the Hall of Fame just on its own, his spirit of competition. But I just could not. It made me feel, watching The Last Dance, I go, wow, I could have been a lot better, I guess. I mean, I had a good career, but I mean, that's what I come away. So I can only relate to that moment when I was facing life and death with my own family. That's how serious it was.
Wow, that's a beautiful, amazing story. And it's amazing because there's this long-held belief that it's just not possible in baseball to have that chip and play that way, because the harder you try, the harder the game can get. But what you're saying is an argument that maybe it is possible, that you can focus a bit more and give yourself that kind of external motivation and rise. I mean, I know it's true in other aspects of our life, so why shouldn't it be true in baseball?
Yeah, I mean, and no question that you look at the great players, the Hall of Famers, they do find a way to balance this need to be even keeled to a certain degree and then be this hyper-focused, laser-confident person to compete every day. And, you know, I think when you play as long as you do, I was fortunate to get, you know, 9 years in, you have these ebbs and flows, you know, rookie year, and then it's like year 5, and you're 30 games out of first place, and you're like, okay, what's going on here? I mean, it's a challenge, and baseball just has that. As Jimmy Pearsall used to say to me, he's like, this game will bring you to your knees. So you better be ready every day, because as soon as you start doing things half, as Tony Muser, our coach, used to say, you, all of a sudden you're kind of in the big leagues, you kind of your way right out of the game. So it takes that really tough balance, the high lows, to even it out, but yet be so focused. So I think I had years, like, you know, certainly in 99, I had that kind of year, and the numbers reflected it. But wow, to do it every year in as you're getting older, really mind-blowing what Jordan was able to do.
Doug Glanville hit .325 in 1999, an on-base percentage of .376 with 34 stolen bases, and one of 4 years in a row with over 600 at-bats. So the man played an awful lot. I saw somebody giving you crap on Twitter the other day for your mediocre Cub career, and you're like, hitting .300 wasn't bad. It was a solid clapback, a well-executed clapback, sir. Tell people about pickup basketball with Michael Jordan in 1994. I had no idea that Lyle Mouton could ball, by the way. I had no idea, but Lyle played college ball, and he was one of your teammates in that game, right?
Yes, he did, LSU. And Curtis Pride was another teammate who played, I think it was, what was it, St. Mary's, William & Mary? I'm not sure the exact, but he was a point guard. So Jordan, when he played, so keep in mind, I played against him all of 94, right? So all through the Southern League. I was in Orlando, he's in Birmingham, and I met him a couple times. And, you know, that was obviously amazing, but he worked before the game and after the game. So season ends, he goes to the Arizona Fall League, and I go to the Arizona Fall League, and Terry Francona is his manager, both places. So they start playing pickup basketball games, like more of like one-on-one, three-on-three, and then it spirals to the whole league hears about it, and we get invited to come. And so we put a team together, five of us, and we go to this Scottsdale Community College, and Jordan's there. It's surreal seeing him on the court, and I have video to prove this, by the way. So he's out there, and crazy enough, we keep feeding Mouton, posting up, and somehow we actually win this 5-on-5 versus Michael Jordan, right? So I don't even tell this story because I keep thinking Jordan is so competitive, he literally might pull up in my driveway and challenge me to one-on-one to settle this. All right, so I kind of like whisper this story. But we actually win this game. And I think Francona took the final shot and missed. And Jordan was trying to pass. He was trying to be unselfish. And I mean, so look, I'm sure if he was playing, you know, for the NBA championship, he would have destroyed us, and, you know, I'm sure. But we actually did end up with one more, you know, basket than they did. So, and he was upset. He kicked the ball into the rafters after the game and all this. But so I can go down and actually tell that true story. I still don't really, I pinch myself trying to figure it out, but the video is there.
Oh, tremendous. You got him.
And he would trash talk. If you were wearing Reeboks, he'd say, "Oh, I'm coming at you," like one-on-one. He'd look at you and say, "This, what I'm about to do to you right now, you're going to tell your grandkids." I mean, he was hilarious. And but wow, that was unbelievable. But I got dunked on intentionally at one point. You know, I was pretty fast, so I can run with anybody. And he had a little bit of a breakaway. I actually ran him down at half court. I took off. And then I knew somewhere in there he was about to, you know, take flight. So I said, you know what, I'm going to still try to block this shot just to see what happens. So he basically takes off at the free throw line. I jump. And he's literally sitting on my head when he slammed the ball. And I you know, I could play a little bit above the rim. So that was just like, that's why he shot those line drive shots. Because when he jumped, even his jump shots, he was shooting downhill. That's how high he got. And to see it on the court was like watching SpaceX or something. It just like made no sense on how high this guy got up. It was just mind-blowing.
Wow, what a tremendous experience to catalog away. And I got to say, I love thinking about Curtis Pride. I always rooted for him. Born deaf, and I just looked him up. I didn't realize he's the baseball coach at Gallaudet. How perfect is that? Right? I did not know that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, he was a great player. He could play.
Yeah, he sure could. All right, last thing, Doug, you and I were talking. What is your, we've talked about the spinners before, lots of Hall & Oates. Why Sam Cooke? What is hitting you hard about Sam Cooke right now? His story is fascinating, eventually so dark, as a lot of people know, but, you know, a gospel singer in the 50s, moved to Chicago, went to Phillips Academy, same as Nat King Cole, not far from where I'm sitting right now, as a matter of fact. But what's hitting you about Sam Cooke right now?
Man, you know, Sam Cooke, I'm not even sure when I first, you know, heard him, but I just connected, you know, just the music, the harmonies, he's just sort of catchy. And I learned a little bit more about his story because there was a book out years ago called You Send Me. Mm-hmm. And then there's a documentary on Netflix. So I watched that fairly recently. And I think one real strange, surreal connection was the where, I want to say the Hotel Figaro, or I can't remember where he got shot, but I know the address was somewhere in like California, L.A. proper.
Yep.
And I was driving, we were going to a game playing against the Dodgers or the Phillies, and as I was reading the part about where he got shot, I was literally in that neighborhood as we turned on the bus. So I was like, whoa, this is deep. So I learned a lot more about him. But I think the compelling story from the Netflix story is just how he was really this socially conscious vocalist that had this beautiful ability to sort of span many different diverse people, right? But yet he had this activist side to him that mm-hmm. was very driven by trying to create equity for the black community. And so you could see, you know, he was on the cusp of really becoming this sort of transformational figure. I mean, he was already number two to Elvis in sales. I mean, he was still already big time. But you think of, you know, people cut short, whether it's like Aaliyah or these sort of great talented singers that you go, gosh, like what could have been? And
yes.
Kurt Cobain and so on. So I just found it to be such a connecting story because he was great. I mean, and he was, you know, talking to Ali, and he just found, but he had a deep conscience, but also understood the business side. So, you know, cut down very short, very early in life, and tragically. So his music is just—it's so powerful. Like Change Gonna Come, and all. I mean, these songs are just like hit you in the soul.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Just a fascinating guy, and considered by a lot of people to be like the father of soul music, just the beginnings of it, but bringing the church to the secular. And he added the E at the end of his name to signify the beginning of a new life. I love that when he realized he was going to go secular. Well, we'll go out with a little. This is Bring It On Home to Me, which might be my favorite. You know who's singing with him on this? The Low Harmony? I didn't know it for a long time, and when I learned it, I can never unhear it. Here, turn it up for a second, Sean.
Yeah.
If you ever change your mind about leaving me behind, yeah, bring it to me, bring your sweet loving, bring it on home to me, yeah.
You know who's singing that harmony with him?
Yeah. Oh. Wow, Ray Charles, who's singing with him?
It's a good guess. His childhood friend, Lou Rawls.
Lou That's Rawls. Lou Rawls. Wow.
You'll never find.
You'll
right?
never find. Yes. Yeah. Man.
That's,
I mean,
from a rival gospel band, Lou Rawls, and Sam said, "Come on over here. Come on, sing this with me."
Yeah, and he did a track with Muhammad Ali. I mean, this guy, you know, he really got it, and just like to connect people, but. Yeah, just tragic, and what a voice, like Marvin Gaye, it was almost an instrument, so I encourage everybody to check out his greatest hits. I mean, there's so many songs that when you listen to you go, oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah, there's that one, and that one, and that one, and that one.
Exactly.
Doug, a pleasure, I can talk to you all day. Thank you for the time, stay healthy, stay safe, and let's hope we get some baseball soon.
Yeah, Matt, always a pleasure. Take care.
All right. Thank you. You too.
All right.
That's Doug Glanville right there on 670 The Score. All righty. Top of the hour, Kendall Gill on The Last Dance and more. I promised it to you. When we come back, we'll talk about that. And you'll hear from Bob Costas, a postseason scenario, a postseason plan that he says he got from Jerry Reinsdorf that I'd never heard before that I absolutely love. That's coming up next on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The sixth inning is brought to you by Meijer. When we support the home team, we all win. Little shout out to Matt Spiegel. With Toto Rosanna, one of his favorites.
Oh, man. I forgot that that happened. I forgot that Casper did me dirty like that. Len Casper calling me out during a game. When was that? Was that last year, Sean? I don't remember.
Yeah, 2019. I think it was like in May or something during a Dodgers series. But every time I think of that song, I think of Len doing that to you. And then when Nancy Faust was playing Rosanna on her organ at her house, I immediately thought of you.
Oh, that's tremendous. This is Nancy Faust playing Rosanna. She's been tweeting herself playing some stuff, and it always sounds great. She's got the home organ, which sounds like a ballpark organ. It's fabulous. But Casper knows that I'm not a big Toto fan. I'm deeply not a big Toto fan, and he wants to do Rosanna one of these years. I'm sure we're going to end up doing it at the Hot Stove Cool Music event, Theo Epstein's charity event, which we get to play and at the Metro every year. My God, I hope the Metro survives. I hope Hot Stove Cool Music comes back. I don't think it'll be happening this year in June. I know they had to cancel the one in Boston. It's a tremendous event, but you know, we'll always have Casper giving me crap on a Cubs broadcast about Toto. This segment on The Score is brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Fed up with companies selling your data? DuckDuckGo is on it. They help millions of people like you take back their privacy online. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers all for free. DuckDuckGo Privacy Simplified. Kendall Gill at the top of the hour right here on The Score to talk Last Dance and Michael and more. But before that, I mentioned that Bob Costas was on Starkville with our last guest, Doug Glanville, and with Jason Stark. And they brought up to him the plan for the postseason that Joel Sherman of the New York Post had first leaked. And by the way, if you're just joining us, we've talked plenty about the protocol document, the 67-page protocol document that MLB has. It's certainly big, big news. We've talked about a lot and did so a lot of the first hour. But I wanted to share this with you because this is a little more fun to think about, and we all could use a little fun, don't you think? I do think so. Thank you, Speaks. So anyway, the plan as currently constructed that we'll probably get this year if they do play and give us a postseason is for 14 playoff teams, 7 in each league, 3 division winners and 4 wild card teams. So here's what would happen. The best of the division winners gets a bye. The other 2 division winners and the best wild card team would host 3 different best of 3 series against those bottom 3 wildcard teams. All of those games would be hosted by the home team as a bit of an incentive, and you would emerge with 3 winners and then the best division winner who's had a bye, has had a complete bye for 3 days or 4 days. Then the next round, the LDS, is 2 best of 5 games. two best of five series. And then the LCS is one best of seven. So that's a total of 26 games possible in each league. That is the kind of expanded inventory that baseball is looking for in getting more teams, more games, more postseason product. There's a lot of money to be made there. I get it. Listen to the Costas plan, as he said he heard first from Jerry Reinsdorf. I had never heard it before, and I like it a hell of a lot better. This is Bob Costas from Starkville.
There is a much, much better answer to this question. And I think that Jerry Reinsdorf gets credit for this, or at least I heard it via Jerry Reinsdorf. Baseball wants to expand the postseason, both because it will give even more teams and their fan bases a reason to be interested in the regular season, and because they want more postseason inventory for television. But at the same time, baseball's got to recognize that it has a tradition of a long regular season. And that regular season not only has competitive meaning, it has drama too. The three division winners sit and wait, but not for long. You do have four wild cards. They pair off. If you want to let the best wild card pick which team it wants to play, fine. But let's say for the purposes of this discussion, one plays four and two plays three on the home field of the higher seeded wild card. Now you have two winners. Those two winners play on the home field of a higher seeded team. These are one game knockouts. They're not two out of three. So in very short order, you've eliminated those three teams. The wild card that emerges has to have won two games. They have to have gone 2-0. Now you've given television what it loves, elimination games, because every game is an elimination game. So you've given them that inventory. You haven't penalized the division winners. In fact, you've actually increased the importance of the regular season, because the wild card round is now much more difficult than just one game. All the more reason to want to avoid that wild card round. And now you've made it appropriately even more difficult for the wild card team to go all the way. They have to win two games against two different teams. They have to go 2-0. They have to use their pitching staff through two games. And now that wild card survivor plays the division winner with the best record. But make the division series, if you want more postseason inventory, make the division series best out of seven instead of best out of five. So now there's more postseason inventory for the networks. They're best of seven instead of best of five. And when the wild card plays the division winner with the best record, it's not 2-3-2, it's 2-2-3. So you're further disadvantaging the wild card and further advantaging the team that had the best record in the league. Meanwhile, the second and third best division winners play a standard best out of seven. And if the wild card advances to the LCS, then it's on equal footing. It's a 2-3-2 situation at that point.
So I love that. Dial it up and let's talk about it, as I'm going to give you my thoughts on it. 312-644-6767, or you can text me at 67011. I think that is so much better than what has been proposed. So you get four wildcard teams just like they want, but those four teams pair up for two coin flip games. Then those two winners play another coin flip game, and we get the excitement of those games. Meanwhile, the three division winners get those 3 days to rest, right? They deserve it. Congratulations. You get to recharge. The one wildcard team that emerges from there has just played two games and is at an inherent disadvantage. And then they play the best division winner with, as you heard there, the 2-2-3 setup instead of the 2-3-2. So they only get two home games in a best of seven, further disadvantaging, the wildcard winner and giving a better advantage to the best division winner. And then, yeah, go ahead and expand the best of fives to best of sevens for the LDS. So I did the math. The plan that's out there now would have three different best of threes. That's a possibility for nine games. Two best of fives, possibility for 10, and then one best of seven. So that's seven. So that's 26 games possible. The Kostas-Reinsdorf plan, the Reinsdorf plan, Kostdorf, yeah, Reinsdorf. The Kostas-Reinsdorf plan would have the two coin flip games, then another, so that's three, then two best of sevens, that's 14, and then another best of seven, so that's a total of 24 games possible. That's only two less than what would be possible in the other plan. And it's better. I like it a lot. The one gamer keeps that excitement, which TV loves. And I love it. Look, I've given in to the idea that as much as the wild card game, the coin flip game, feels inequitable in terms of deciding who moves on to the playoffs, it brings a level of excitement that is great for the sport. And this would bring that. You have three of those games in every postseason. And they are among teams that they battled through the longest, most grueling regular season in baseball. Good for them. They made it. Good for them. But you don't deserve an easy road. You deserve a hard road. So I like this plan a lot. I think it keeps the integrity of the regular season and still gives you an expanded volume of games and some of the excitement that the coin flips provide.
What negatives do you see in this plan? I think the only negative that I would see is that you might disadvantage the wild card winner too much, because we look at Minnesota and every time they play the Yankees in the playoffs, they absolutely get smoked. I just don't know if it would make for a competitive first matchup between the wild card and then the division winner they end up playing.
Tough, win your division. So what? Or rise up and get it done. Win two games on the road, not just one. I like when wild card teams get in. It's fun when they make kind of a historic run. We just saw it. The Nationals were a wild card team, right? And they won their one game wild card. It was like, oh my God, we won something. It was the first time they ever won anything, and that unleashed some relaxation, and they went on a crazy run, and they got it done. You better. That's what you got to do. Look, when Eli Manning and the Giants won three games on the road as a wild card playoff team to get to the Super Bowl, well done. You know, it makes it more inarguable to me when you overcome the odds that you deserve. I want to see them forced to battle like that. So I see what you say as a negative, Sean, and I poo-poo it. I throw it to the side and tell you it's a positive.
I think, sir, Overall it's a fantastic proposal from Bob Kostas and Jerry Reinsdorf, the Kostas-Reinsdorf Initiative.
Yes.
I think it's great. And you're right. I mean, just imagine what this place would be like, Chicago would be like, if last year the Cubs make it in as the third wild card team of four. They beat Arizona in the first round, then they beat the Mets in the second round, and then they get to play St. Louis or the Dodgers in round one, and then they end up beating the Dodgers. I mean, this city would be going insane. So I think it does provide for great drama. It's just that drama, how often will that happen? That would be my only worry.
Yeah, no, I understand. If the White Sox are a wild card team and the Twins win the division, then the White Sox would have to play the Indians, because two of your four wild cards out of the American League are definitely coming from that division. So White Sox and Indians play a one gamer, and, you know, Giolito would have to outpitch Shane Bieber in that one gamer. And then Dylan Cease would, let's say they play Oakland, Dylan Cease would have to beat Mike Fiers in another one-gamer. And then you've used those two guys, and those two guys can't pitch for you in games one or two. So you get them back for games three and four at home. Your only two home games when you're battling the Yankees in your the best division winner. You're battling the Yankees, White Sox, Yankees in the playoffs. Doesn't this sound nice, by the way? This stuff, this baseball, this actual baseball conversation, even if it's, you know, if we're talking about things that might happen or could happen, we're still talking about the game. We're not talking about money. We haven't mentioned money or COVID-19 in almost 4 minutes. That's exciting. I dig it. I dig it, and I hope they listen. I'd be all down. I'd be down for Commissioner Kostas. Sure, he doesn't want the job. I'd be down for Commissioner Glanville. Have you seen this proposal out there? Commissioner Glanville. Someone texted that earlier and tweeted at me as well, unless it was a different person. But would Doug Glanville take the commissioner's job? He wouldn't be offered it. He would not be offered it. Because you know what the commissioner is? Let's all say it together. He's just a pawn for the owners. Right? I saw somebody write it as their steward. I think it was Ken Davidoff today wrote that Rob Manfred has presented an honorable proposal here as the steward of the owners. Oh, steward is a nice way of saying pawn or stooge or the like. Oh, God. I miss you, Faye Vincent. I miss you, Bart Giamatti. Texters at 670-11. We need to get those division series to a seven-game series. I hate the first round being five-game series. I absolutely agree. So this is a way to do that. Instead of just adding teams and adding best of threes, you want to add teams? Okay. Add a couple of coin flips and then make those division series seven-gamers. I don't like the five-gamer either. This text, I very much like the 2-2-3 as the series format. Let's make that the standard format for all sports across the board. 2-2-3. Right now it's 2-3-2. Although, isn't it in hockey and basketball, isn't it 2-2-1-1-1? Right, Sean? Increased travel. But yeah, the pivotal game five is usually at home for hockey and basketball. Ah, boy. I don't know if that'll be the case in the future. When sports does come back, you could be looking at longer series, less travel, and some of that might be good. Some of that might be good.
Yeah, so NBA, it's 2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah. And understandably, because those series, man, a series can turn so big, and the home team deserves that game five. They deserve that pivotal game five. And for baseball, you know, if you're not going to have that kind of travel, I think I like 2-2-3. If you earn home field, you really deserve it. As long as it's not decided by, I don't know, whichever league wins the All-Star game. Thank you very much. Good night, everybody. It is 670 The Score. It is Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. One more hour to go. Looking forward very much to talking to Chris Kampka at C. Kampka on the Twitters, the Sultan of Stat for NBC Sports Chicago. We'll talk to him at 1240. Very much looking for that. I think he's going to continue the musical bent that this show has had with Greg Kot and Funkadelic and Doug Glanville and Sam Cooke and Toto, all playing a role here today. After us at noon, it is December 9th, 2018. It is the Bears and the Rams. You can play Nancy Faust. It's the Bears and the Rams, a 15-6 win for the Bears. Great performance by the Bears defense on a Sunday night. Jeff Joniak will offer some thoughts before the game, after the Bears game, as we complete our Bears Sundays. It'll be Mark Grody until 5 p.m. And after Grody, it's Cubs versus Reds from 2016. Javier Baez, grand slam in the 15th inning. Spoiler alert, that's the game coming up tonight at 5 p.m. on The Score. We'll come back and talk to Kendall Gill next on Hit and Run on The Score.
If I get the Rona.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh,
I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
it
taken
took
care
forever,
of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.